you're eyeing August then for like the first sort of domino to fall.
Yeah.
And that's a specific company that you have.
So that company is not a company that we've, it's not a public company. It's called Lykos Therapeutics.
Gotcha. But that's just the, that's kind of the indicator that you're looking at.
Right. Because, so one thing that I've noticed talking to some of the some of my contacts at bigger investment banks, they've kind of stayed away from it because they can't take on as much risk as like, say I can, you know, as an individual investor.
Right.
So if they have no way to know that the FDA is really going to ever approve a psychedelic molecule, I can understand why they wouldn't want to put a whole lot of money into it. But JP Morgan did a conference, a health sciences conference in January. There were psychedelics companies there, and they went on record saying that they are investing in psychedelics companies this year. So that's a clear indication to me that, and look, they know a lot more than I do.
Right.
You know, so they know something.
Welcome to the Angel Research Podcast. My name is Jason Freert, and I'm here with the illustrious Jeff Siegel.
Illustrious.
Yeah, I try to come up with a new descriptor every time.
I like how Rogan always says the great and powerful.
The great and powerful. Legendary Jeff Siegel. Mm. You really are legendary now in this space. You've been doing it for how long?
God, I mean, I've been in this business.
Don't want to date you.
No, I've been. I got into this business in '94.
Yeah, so that's
30 years.
And that's what I think some of our subscribers might not realize that, you know, we've been doing. I mean, that was with Agora Publishing, but even Angel. You know, I started in 2005. You know, we've been going around this for a while, and you kind of see some of these people pop up, and you're like, where did this person come from? And like, you know, it's not to say that, you know, a person can't start their own thing, but there's a lot of shysters out there that
are saying
like all sorts of just crazy stuff on the internet. Like,
well, you know, like when this doesn't really happen to me anymore because I kind of put a stop to it early on. But when I first started Green Chip Stocks, this was like the height of solar.
Right.
Like solar was killing it. We just got in at the right time and did really, really well. But not many analysts were covering solar at the time, so I would go to all these conferences, and a lot of startups would be there, and like a penny stocks, you know, and they would show up, and the IR people would just come up to me and be like, "What's it going to cost?"
Yeah,
like they had no qualms about just throwing it out there, like we basically will pay you to promote our stock, and they were all, listen, if a company is worth anything, they'll never do that to you.
Right. Well, and that's not to say that doesn't that still goes on.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And I think there's nothing it's kind of interesting because there's nothing illegal about that.
It's unethical as fuck.
Well, it depends on whose perspective you're looking at, right? Mm. So they're allowed to do it for a newsletter editor, and then you have to disclose. You know, as a policy, though, Angel Publishing, and there are a lot of publishers out there that have the same policy, that they don't accept payment from you know, companies to promote stocks. I mean, to me, that's like our golden rule, because once you do that, then you're quote unquote compromised, so to speak. So,
but they do other things too. It's not always money. So, like, I've had offers to, you know, stay at my house in Hawaii for the month. You know, and it's like they find ways to get around it. But again, like if anyone is doing that, like any company worth anything will never offer to pay for coverage because they don't need it.
Right.
You know, so I learned that pretty quickly. But then after a couple of years of me just constantly turning people down, then they just stop. They don't they don't hit you up anymore, which is fine. But yeah, it's interesting when I look back in my career and think about when I first started and I was still very green. Like I still didn't really understand the landscape of like how IR works and how people push stocks. I didn't get it. To me, I was just like, oh, yeah, you invest. You find something you like, and if it makes sense, you invest, you make money. So I got a pretty powerful lesson within that probably first couple of years.
Yeah, and I think all of our people that have write for us and, you know, do research have gone through various stages of that as well. It's something that you just kind of have to learn. That's why experience is important for that, maintaining your independence. And I think it's certainly tough. I mean, if someone's going to be like, hey, I'll pay you $30,000, all you got to do is write this ticker symbol down and send it out. Like, I guess, you know, some people find that, you know, tough to turn down.
Yeah, but if you want any kind of longevity in this business, yeah. you can't do that. You won't be around very long.
Right. So, and Greenship Stacks is still around.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of funny that we talk about that space and, you know, the IR people kind of follow the trends as well, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, when solar was getting hot, I'm sure it is, and then, you know, then kind of it fell off a little bit, and then, you know, there was other things that were more popular going into, you know, crypto and then mm-hmm. weed, and they just, you know, there's always kind of been that mining like element because you always need precious resources and stuff like that. But they also kind of tend to jump to the various things that they think they can kind of sell. And like right. now it's like AI, like everything's AI. Although I'm actually surprised more companies aren't trying to lean into the AI as much as you would think that they did on crypto. Like remember that long, what was it the Long Island Iced Tea Company was like, we're changing our name to Long Island blockchain.
I didn't even know about that one.
Yeah, it was like a whole thing, and they like spiked. Like I don't even think it's a company anymore. But
well, you know, there was a mining company years ago, and it was really just a shell. And when cannabis first hit, you know, this was probably about maybe a year or two after we had already made a lot of money in the space. They're like, hey, we're a cannabis grower. And I'm like, weren't you like a gold miner like a few months ago? And then you look at like all their SEC documents and they're like, you know, currently has $40,000 on hand. Yeah. You know, like no one in the company knows anything about cannabis.
Yeah, it's a desperation.
Yeah. But I mean, it's sad, but it worked. I mean, they went out of business like they should, but there was probably a good year that they, you know, unfortunately suckered a lot of investors out of their money.
Yeah, because people are, we're seeing in AI, like, there's legitimate companies out there that are in the space making profitable, but then there's other ones that it's like, oh, like, and people are just like, hey, I got to find the next AI play or the next mm-hmm. whatever, and they're like, it just has the word in there. They're like, ah, might as well, and they might even know it's shit. They're just like, oh, I'm going to kind of, you know, ride this trend and I'll get out when it's,
yeah,
when it's, you know, when I've made a couple hundred percent.
You know, a few years ago, we got into the psychedelic space and made some recommendations, made some money. And then it was overheated. Same thing. You started seeing a lot of companies showing up that didn't know anything about psychedelics, but they were just trying to milk it. And of course, that's when we got out. We took the money. We're like, okay, we're done. I still believe in the market. I think there's a lot of potential here. But I knew at that time, it was just a free-for-all, so we got out.
Yeah.
Which it was good. I'm glad it kind of melted down and imploded because it got a lot of the laggards out of there. But even now, this year is going to be a really big year for psychedelics for a number of reasons. We can talk about that. But I can tell you that there are less shady psychedelic
right.
stocks than there were 3 years ago, but there's still quite a few.
Right.
And even though there's a lot of good stuff that's happening in the space this year, you still have to be really careful because there's a lot of shady penny stocks out there that are going to try to ride this wave.
Yeah. Well, I don't think that's ever going to go away.
No, it's right? not.
There really isn't. And you think about, you know, that's just the maturation of the industry. And I think that's one of the benefits of you doing this for so long is like you kind of start to develop this sixth sense of like, you know, it's like the contrary. You just instead of being like, oh, this industry is super hot, like look at all these things going up, it's like you train your brain to be like, wait a minute, something's going on here, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And then kind of dig in and be like, okay, this is clearly going to be something that's going to wash out. And there's always an underlying, I think, positive theme to it, right? There wouldn't be a reason for any of these. Like, there's obviously, like, AI is huge. Everybody kind of knows that. You know, crypto, huge. It's still around. You know, the cannabis, like, there's always an underlying, you know, thing that people can see, but then they kind of pile in and you have these people trying to ride the wave. Mm-hmm.
That's what's happening now. So, and I think we talked about this last time. There is a company that has developed a treatment for PTSD. It's a psychedelic-based
right.
treatment for PTSD. We expect the FDA to clear it on August 11th. That's the date that FDA has given us. Now, those dates can change.
Right.
But we're expecting to see this go through. I mean, the company already went through phase three clinical trials.
I mean,
everything
that's
looks great.
Soon.
It's
I mean,
very
you're talking
soon.
About before, you know, before the end of the summer.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that's the thing is we know that if this does happen, if the FDA signs off on it, that means that we now know the FDA will sign off on other psychedelics
right.
that are in phase two and phase three clinical trials. So once I would say it was late last year when that news started coming forward, that's when I started seeing some, you know, penny stocks kind of getting some attention. And because we were in the space years ago, I get hit up a lot from writers for like newspapers and magazines and stuff.
Right.
And they ask my opinion. And I don't think I made a lot of friends because I'm very clear that, you know, a lot of these companies, they say have this molecule that can do this or that.
Right.
But if you're in drug discovery and development, you have to have a ton of money to get through clinical trials. And if I look at, say, 100 stocks that are, you know, either directly or indirectly related to psychedelics, maybe four have enough cash to get through, let's say, the next 3 years. This thing, clinical trials can take 10 years.
Right. So this is kind of how this sort of space is wildly different than the cannabis craze, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, the cannabis craze was just like you said, hey, like I got a warehouse, like I got some seeds, like
right.
I can grow some plants, like let's just grow some plants. And they're kind of, it's like the legislation. It was the whole idea of like a, you know, it already had the whole quote-unquote medicinal use, but then it's like, oh, like now there's this big push for recreational. You know, Maryland last year was legal. I'll tell you what, I'm driving down 95, and I can just smell, like...
Oh, because they have the facilities off of 95.
No, I think just people, like,
oh,
baking
really?
In their car. Is that
okay.
what it is, though? I
is
mean,
it,
why
it...
would I smell, like, the weed? They're growing weed off of 95?
Yeah, so down...
Okay, maybe that's what it is. That
yeah.
actually would make more sense, because I'm like, dude, people are just baking out their car, and I'm just like...
Once you pass the city, once you pass like the trash, where they burn the trash,
right?
Whatever they call it, I don't know. Once you pass that, there's a bunch of warehouses out there where they grow, and then as you get closer
okay.
to the further west you go, there's more warehouses out
yeah.
there. Because I remember visiting when they were first building them.
That would make more sense.
You could smell it.
But
yeah.
I also will just be walking around here, and you can
yeah.
around the office, you can smell it. So anyway, that was the cannabis boom, which obviously you played for like. Multiple 1,000% gains and stuff like that. But the psychedelics side is more like an actual drug, right? So it's more
right.
in the pharmaceutical space, which seems to be a whole different ballgame, like you said, with, you know, trials. But it also seems like there's a potential, like, much wider range of use for this type of stuff. Right.
Yeah. So I think from an investment perspective, it's a lot more attractive. So if you look at a cannabis company, most cannabis companies, they grow weed. It's a commodity. It's a race to the bottom. So the first couple of years, it was great. But a cannabis company, even the public companies that are the biggest players and they grow weed, they're never going to be worth that much. Even if more and more people smoke weed and more legislation happens, there's only so much money they'll be able to make because they're farmers, essentially.
Right.
You know, farmers don't make money. So, but if you look at psychedelics, now we're talking about medicine. Now we're talking about pharmaceuticals. If you see some of the big money that's going into some of the smaller psychedelics companies that are doing clinical trials, there are people on those boards that are former pharmaceutical execs. There's
right.
pharmaceutical money that goes into these companies. So it's kind of like, how do you think you're going to make more money from a company that sells pre-rolls and tinctures or a company that sells... a pharmaceutical that's more valuable than boner pills.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's a huge difference.
Yeah.
And that's why I think even though I was very excited when the cannabis thing happened, obviously, because we got in early, but I'm more excited about this because I think this is a long-term investment opportunity. Cannabis
right.
was kind of like, we had a couple years, but after that, there's really not much left. Once the FDA approves the first psychedelic substance, to be used to treat PTSD, there's a whole line of other companies doing the same thing for different different diseases.
Yeah, I was gonna say, what are like the main, like we know PTSD. I mean, I almost want to say like anything with the brain, like there's a potential application.
Right. So it's most of it right now is mental health. So you have
right
depression, anxiety, PTSD, and addiction. Those are the top four.
Which are skyrocketing huge. Everywhere. So huge. There's, you know.
Oh, addiction alone. The addiction treatment market is just growing rapidly, and it continues to grow rapidly. I'm also very interested in seeing some of these companies using psychedelics to treat neurodegenerative disorders. So like Parkinson's disease, yeah. MS, stroke, even stroke is now being studied. I think it was psilocybin being used to treat stroke patients. Chronic pain is a new one. Eating disorders is a new one. And there's some really valuable research that we're seeing that's very encouraging. And a lot of this stuff is coming from Hopkins, like right nearby mm-hmm. this office. So it's bigger than just this first company that's doing psychedelics for PTSD. It's so much bigger. And we've even talked about this. I actually made a list of all the treatments that exist now that could be where psychedelics could be used as an alternative. It's more than $1 trillion. If you add them all up.
Right.
Now, I'm not saying that there's no one company that's going to treat all these things, but there's a series of companies. So as an investor, that's great for me because that gives me an opportunity to, you know, profit from the addiction treatment market, from Parkinson's, from stroke, from anorexia, from smoking cessation is a huge one. So,
right.
I mean, in terms of an investment opportunity, and when you're looking at the biotech / pharmaceutical space, there's so much. There's just so much opportunity.
And it seems like it's likely that these companies that are doing this research and trials are likely to just get bought up if they have something. So is that kind of like the plan with these, or are some of these the stocks and companies that you're looking at, are they, you know, pharmaceutical companies that just like have a division that's doing this? Or is this like a company that is basically like, hey, we are going to be a psychedelic pharmaceutical company or a psilocybin pharmaceutical company. We're studying this particular to treat this like specific disease. Or is it, And we're hoping to get sold, or we're hoping to expand out with the revenue from our first drug, or is it more like maybe somebody that actually has drugs on the market, and this is kind of like another drug that they're researching?
So really, I treat psychedelics companies like biotech companies,
right?
And pretty much every biotech company either sells the entire company or their IP to a pharmaceutical company,
right?
I've talked to so many management teams at different psychedelics companies. I don't know a single one that isn't looking to be bought out.
Right.
You know, and the interesting thing is the way some of them see this working out is they're going to get bought out, or their IP will get bought out after phase two clinical trials, because it doesn't make sense to go all the way to phase three and spend all that money when a big pharmaceutical company come along and just buy the IP and then
plug
take
it into.
And then they can get it through phase three a lot faster.
Right.
And that's really what's I can't think of a single psychedelics company that has any desire to become like a lone standing operation to go against, you know, AstraZeneca or something like that. It just wouldn't make any sense.
Right. That's interesting. So are in the biotech realm for these guys, I mean, is it like they have one shot here? You know what I mean? Like, it seems like some of these are, you know, hey, we're going to go through this trial, but if the trial fails, then they basically are, it's kind of like feast or famine, right?
So I won't invest in any psychedelics company if they don't have more than one indication.
Okay.
So if I look at the pipeline, I need to see, now it could be the same molecule. So for instance, there's one company that has the same molecule for three different indications.
Okay.
So one is general anxiety disorder. Another one is treatment-resistant depression. And I believe the other one might be related to addiction. It's the same molecule. It's just different versions of that molecule.
Okay.
So you could have maybe the addiction one doesn't work, but there's this promising results for anxiety.
Right.
So it's If you just have, it doesn't make sense.
Like,
to
I mean, we talked about a lot of drugs. Like, what was the Viagra was originally for like something with the heart or something.
Yeah, because it opens blood vessels.
Yeah. Yeah, and so they're like, oh, what's going on here? And that turns to, but that it's not just you, that's kind of like a common story. But I feel like that's a lot of drugs. They
Ozempic's
like,
perfect example.
Right. What was that originally for?
That was for diabetes, I believe.
And oh, but it's for diabetes because it helps them lose weight, right?
I don't know. That. I know it wasn't. I don't think it was about that. I think the weight loss thing was like they figured out along the way.
Gotcha. And now you can't get it because everybody wants to take it.
Apparently, there's some evidence showing that it could help with addiction too.
I did see that too. So it's interesting. So it sounds pretty exciting. I mean, so you're eyeing August then for like the first sort of domino to fall.
Yeah.
And that's a specific company that you have.
So that company is not a company that we've, it's not a public company. It's called Lykos Therapeutics.
Gotcha. But that's just that's kind of the indicator that you're looking at.
Right. Because, so one thing that I've noticed talking to some of the some of my contacts at bigger investment banks, they've kind of stayed away from it because they can't take on as much risk as, like, say, I can, you know, as an individual investor.
Right.
So if they have no way to know that the FDA is really going to ever approve a psychedelic molecule, I can understand why they wouldn't want to put a whole lot of money into it. But J.P. Morgan did a conference, a health sciences conference in January. There were psychedelics companies there, and they went on record saying that they are investing in psychedelics companies this year. So that's a clear indication to me that, and look, they know a lot more than I do.
Right.
You know, so they know something.
And that's different than the cannabis where it was like nobody wanted to really touch that because it was federally illegal and all this kind of stuff. The banks were like, nah, we're not even going to let you open up a bank account kind of deal. So it's definitely seems to be starting from a further down the road than the cannabis angle.
And there's less political opposition. You know, with cannabis, it seems like it was more embraced by the left than it was the right. But if you look at psychedelics, it's kind of bipartisan. Right. In fact, there are a number of prominent Republicans that have championed using psychedelics specifically as it pertains to treating veterans.
Right.
Dan PTSD, Crenshaw is one. Yeah. What's the guy, the former governor of Texas, Rick Perry. There's a number of them. And it's funny. It's actually one of the few things I've seen Republicans and Democrats agree on. It's in some
incredible.
At some level.
Yeah, incredible.
You see, like Dan Crenshaw and AOC on the same page, or like in the same event.
I think they can agree on aliens too.
You think?
I think so.
Can't we all agree on aliens?
Aliens and psychedelics will unite the country.
They can coexist.
I was gonna say, I don't know. Maybe people. So, back to the larger guys though. Are there larger pharmaceutical companies that are dabbling in this? Or are they just kind of like waiting to see? Like, hey, look, let's just see what these other kind of quote-unquote startups do, and we'll maybe swoop in and kind of buy them.
I know that the big pharmaceutical companies are watching them.
Right.
They don't show their cards.
Yeah.
You know, particularly in this case, because again, we're still waiting for FDA approval. I think you might start seeing them show their cards once that happens.
Yeah.
The only one that I've seen that actually has been a bit vocal about it is called Otsuka Pharmaceuticals, a Japanese company that is invested in some psychedelics companies. But outside of – there's like AstraZeneca. What are some of the other big ones?
Merck, Pfizer.
I know for a fact that those guys are looking at it, but it's not going to be in their reporting. It's not going to – I see them at these events.
Right.
You know, so they're not there because they're looking to score mushrooms.
Maybe both.
Those guys mostly.
So I mean, that's a question I have. The delivery system here for these. I mean, eventually, is it just basically going to be a pill?
It's all kinds of things. It's pill, IV, intranasal is a big one.
Okay.
Those are the three that I've seen mostly.
Okay, and it probably just depends on you know what's you know being treated or you know how that absorbs into the body on whether because everybody's looking for I mean your promotion even talks about like the limitless pill you know everybody's looking for a magic pill although I mean I don't really care I take allergy medicine I use the nasal spray that like works well for me so
right
as long as it's in a form that you know people will take every day and it's going to help them.
Well, you can't. That's the thing. So I have had to explain to some people, it's not like you're going to take actual mushrooms.
Right.
Know? So when you do clinical trials, everything has to be exact. And you can't give someone three caps and say, I think that's 5 milligrams,
mushrooms.
5 grams or whatever.
I don't even like mushrooms. Right. Maybe like some saute. You got to put some butter on them and stuff.
Some salt and pepper.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, I mean, you'll see in the labs, they actually, these are analogs of these molecules. And right. It's very, very strict in terms of dosing.
Right. Great. So, that is, how many companies do you have in this report?
So there's three in this report.
Okay.
There are two other companies that I'm meeting with right now that I like on paper, right. But I'm still meeting with them because, you know, sometimes stuff on paper doesn't really pan out once you talk to management.
Right.
So there's two that I hope to add to the portfolio this year. The same thing, it's drug discovery and development.
Yeah.
We call it EN23. It's just another word for psychedelics.
Yeah.
And these one company is using LSD analog, and another one is using ibogaine, which is it's pretty much used as a treatment for addiction.
Mm-hmm.
It's not legal in the U.S. It's legal in Mexico and some of the Caribbean islands. A lot of people go to Mexico to use ibogaine.
Yeah, why isn't it legal? I mean, I know there's a push to make it legal, but it's just
ibogaine is has an incredible record of success in terms of treating addiction. And what it does is essentially allows you to kick a habit without going through withdrawals.
Right.
And that's the problem for some people. They say, okay, I'm on, you know, opioids and they want to get off of it, but they go through withdrawals and it's hard to stick to it. This takes the physical withdrawals away. So it seems like, and you have to, it's not like you don't just take it and walk away. It's a process. I think it's like three to five weeks that you meet with these psychologists and these therapists and you go through the process. But when you leave, you're no longer physically addicted to the drug.
Yeah.
The problem is you have to make sure that you don't go back to a place where you were when you were addicted, because you could fall right back into the addiction.
Yeah. I mean, if you're living with a roommate who's a drug dealer and was always getting in, you go right back in there. It's like, hey, man, welcome back.
Exactly. The thing with ibogaine, too, is it can be dangerous. So there are some there have been studies that show that it can cause heart problems.
Okay.
There's one place I know in Mexico that does ibogaine treatments, and there are actual, like, legit doctors there that are there 24/7. Because it can be very – like any drug. You know, there's certain drugs you just, I had a colonoscopy 3 weeks ago and they gave me fentanyl. I would never take fentanyl in a million years, but in that environment where it was administered
with
by a doctor, then
of course,
I took it. This is, ibogaine's kind of the same thing.
How big do you think the fentanyl crisis and just like that whole angle of growing addiction will play into maybe like fast tracking some of this stuff? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, is it like, you know, because obviously you produce a drug to, you know, quote unquote cure or assist in a problem that is out there, that is out, and this is just a growing problem. Is there going to be, or is that part of the reason some of these people are already like, yeah, we kind of, they're considering it because, like, they see, like, all of the just devastation that's happening with fentanyl?
I think that a lot of this has to do with the health insurance companies that want to see these psychedelics treatments for addiction become approved. Because what we've seen thus far in clinical trials, you can have someone who's battling addiction. It doesn't matter what addiction, let's just say alcoholism. And they do the treatment, and they're clean for a year and a half. And they monitor them every quarter or something like that. Or let's say probably something that makes more sense in this discussion would be fentanyl. Or not fentanyl, but like let's say heroin. Okay, they're addicted to heroin, and they use a psychedelic treatment to get off heroin. Well, right now you have methadone and Suboxone that you can use to treat heroin addiction, but you need to take it all the time, so you're really trading one habit for another. It's much safer, than using heroin, but if an insurance company is covering it, that means they have to keep covering the Suboxone every week or however, right. however many times you have to get it. And it's probably for the rest of your life. Whereas you can have a psychedelic treatment that you do three times a year. And that's and that'll cover you for the next 3 years.
So, but the people from that are making Suboxone, they want you to...
Of course. But the health insurance companies are more powerful than the pharmaceutical companies. And okay. I think a lot of people fail to realize that. Health insurance companies decide what you're going to get, what the doctor's going to prescribe you.
Right.
For the most part. Because very few people can afford to just pay out of pocket.
Right.
So when the health insurance companies say, hey, you know, we're really interested in finding out more about this because it's going to save us a lot of money. Pharmaceutical companies may not like that, but if they want it to be covered by health insurance, they have to play the game.
Right.
So I can definitely see how psychedelics could play a huge role in the addiction problem, not just in this country, but all over the world.
Yeah, I was going to say, we're kind of focusing on the U.S. based and like these laws and trials. Is, you know, is there any other sort of international like plays or like companies? I know like AstraZeneca, I guess, is like based out of the UK, or mm-hmm. you know, is this sort of like ground zero just because of the addiction problem, or are there other areas where, you know, it might move faster? It seems like Europe is pretty like chill like on some drug situations, but then they also have a lot of regulation in terms of like the FDA yeah. and shit like that.
There's the U.S. is basic. There's more happening in the U.S. than any other country in terms of psychedelics research.
Right.
We're seeing some in the U.K., Australia, Canada. Those are, but the U.S. is that's where it's pretty much all happening.
Right.
And it's different addictions in different places. You know, we have a heroin problem here, the fentanyl problem here. In Russia, it's alcoholism. You know, there's various drugs in Eastern Europe that I don't even know what they're called.
Every country's got their addiction. That's yeah. just the human condition.
Yeah, it is. And so the idea is that a lot of these companies, like we were talking about before, they will get bought out by the pharmaceutical companies that are global.
Right. So they can take that and distribute it globally. Gotcha. Right. All right. Well, we will put a link to the Limitless report.
Excellent.
Which is an homage to the movie with Bradley Cooper, where he takes the pill and he makes him. Which, do you think there's going to be any sort of like non addiction based use for these things down the road? Because it's not just like, obviously it's kind of like the way in the door is to treat, you know, debilitating mental illness. Mm-hmm. But is this something that like people are just going to be able to take to sort of improve their brain function? You know, there's a, you know, people take mushrooms mm-hmm. recreationally all the time. Is that another area that can potentially come in, or do you think that's maybe moving a little bit too fast?
No, it absolutely could. I think the Limitless pill. So when we talked about that, it really did hit. It strike me as, hey, this really is very similar to it, not in the grandiose way we saw in the movies.
Yeah, of course.
But so, okay. So to give you an example, I don't know if you remember in the movie Limitless, he learns to speak Italian in like 48 hours.
Right, right.
So there actually was a study where they used psilocybin to enhance the ability for someone to learn a foreign language. And it worked.
Yeah.
That's still early research. Yeah. But I thought about that and I was like, this is like the Limitless pill. Yeah. And then I started thinking about some of the other things that psychedelics can do. You know, improve your self-confidence. You know, there's studies that have shown that, you know, people that have taken certain types of psychedelics in a clinical setting saw increases in their self-confidence. What else happened? Oh yeah. So you, with self-confidence, what comes up if you're not, you don't have luck with the ladies, but you have self-confidence now, this could theoretically improve your sex life. You know, if you are constantly battling stress is one of the biggest killers in the world. Stress will kill you faster probably than, I don't know about it, cigarettes, but it's definitely something that really can affect your heart, can affect your brain. Being able to take something that can alleviate stress by alleviating anxiety and depression and PTSD and addiction, you know, that will in effect help you live longer.
Right.
You know, so the more I would dive into what these molecules can do, it really was kind of like, this is kind of like the limitless pill.
Right.
You know?
And, you know, I just think of like people, and I'm one of them too, like needing their coffee and like caffeine in the morning to like, you know, and that's a stimulant on the brain. And that is also an quote unquote addictive substance as well. That is sort of like, just naturally become part of the culture of like, hey, I need my coffee in the morning to kind of, you know, wake up and do my best thinking. So
right. This
is kind of taking it to the next level. So that's really interesting. I am excited to see what happens here. So, and you've already gone on record. You think this is gonna be way bigger than the cannabis thing.
I think it's gonna be way bigger and it's gonna last a lot longer.
Right.
Cannabis, I mean, I guess you can make a couple of bucks in this space still, but not much.
But no, I mean, you think about all these treatments that'll be in there, and it's not going to be, like you said, like cannabis is like, it's still like, you know, there's an edible and like there, you can smoke it or vape it or whatever, mm-hmm. and it's like going down the recreational route. This is going to be like, hey, here's this treatment that is for PTSD, anxiety, depression, which is, you know, seemingly just doing nothing but growing.
Right.
In this country and around the world. So
it'll also be okay, explain. It's kind of like it will have more it'll be more legitimate
right.
in the eyes of most people, because you're not gonna see, you know, mushroom dispensaries and LSD dispensaries.
Right.
This is always gonna be medicine. There's a couple of places that they'll maybe decriminalize it and maybe legalize it in some places in Canada. I think you could in a kind of a gray market buy mushrooms. But this is pharmaceutical. This is biotech.
Yeah.
You know, so while it's easy to look at the cannabis space and think, all these stoners and they're smoking all the time, all this stuff is done in a clinical setting, you know. So it's I guess I have to remind people sometimes, like, this is medicine.
Oh, no. I instantly – I mean, you just think, you know, shrooms, LSD, like – drug, you know,
right.
I mean, hard drugs, and then cannabis, and it's really, and also because it's a process of this therapeutic thing, I think it's still hard for people to, you know, they still just think, hey, I have to take a pill, and then magically I'm better. It's just kind of naturally ingrained. So I think people are opening up to that, and it sounds like this could be the next big thing. I'm excited for it.
We've talked about this. I've been doing this for a long time. Renewables, you know, solar, wind, cannabis, even some of the food tech stuff we got in early on. But I think in terms of like the value
right.
of this.
Societal impact.
It exceeds everything we've ever covered. And I think, I don't think I've ever been more excited about a specific opportunity in my 30 years doing this.
All right. Well, I'm sold. Let's buy it. All right. Thanks, Jeff, for coming on the podcast. Link below to sign up to Green Chip Stocks. I think Green Chip Stocks is like the longest running newsletter we have had here, I believe, in various forms. So sign up and don't forget to like and subscribe and do all that crap. Comment too. Comment on our matching outfits or whatever you want to comment on.
Or if you have any questions, I mean, I'm happy to answer.
Yeah, absolutely. I would invite people to join the Discord too, and they can chat directly.
Well, the Discord's good too, because I, on the Discord channel, I do post things related to psychedelics. The last time the FDA approved breakthrough therapy status for one of the companies that we followed, I posted that on Discord. So anyone who was on Discord who got that message and bought the stock that day is probably up about 50% right now.
Hell yeah. All right. So let's make it happen. Thanks a lot, Jeff.
My pleasure.
Adios.